I walked into Beloved headquarters unannounced. Nobody was there to greet me or anything. I walk into the back where they're doing all the production and then all the fulfillment. And I'm just kind of observing. And I don't think many people really noticed if I was there. And I saw this guy in the corner. He was a younger guy. And he sat there and he pulled out a white sock. And he laid it on this heat press. And then he took a piece of paper that had the print on it. Say it was like a pepperoni pizza. And he laid it over the white sock. And then he pressed it. And then he opened up the press. And the print was on the sock now. It went from the paper to the sock, just like that, like magic. I was curious to know if this would work on my white elastic. He's like, well, let's give it a go. And so he grabbed a poop emoji patterned paper. And he put the white elastic up on the heat press and he put the thing over and he's about to press it. And I'm like, hold on, wait. I don't know what this is made of. Like, this elastic could just melt all over your machine. And he's like, ah, who cares? And he pushed it down. I'm like, yes, I love you. And I'm waiting, just praying that he didn't just like ruin this machine. And he opens it up and it is exactly how I wanted it to be. Like, it was perfect.
This is Nigel Thomas. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is the Ecom Alphas podcast.
So we're back in business as usual today. Another great story from a brand. And this origin story is actually definitely different to most. So it starts off with a trip to Hawaii, a lost wallet, and a piece of broccoli. And I'll let Colby unfold how that one turned out. And he's really an interesting person. He's got this mindset of minimalism. And honestly, it's quite ridiculous and profound how powerful it is and how far it can go. And he talks about how he was about to really give up on this wallet business, but he stuck through the feedback. They had some successful Kickstarter campaigns. And here they are today, running an 8-figure brand, still growing fast, still so much room in the market, but he still kept his principles strong, him and his wife. It's just a great story. And he has some great ideas around influencer marketing, keeping the business lean. And yeah, there's going to be two parts. You talk about the origin story first in this episode. And then you talk more about some of, you know, marketing ideas and strategies into the second episode, which will be released later this week. But it's a really good one. Colby's a great guy, so down to earth, and I think you'll learn a lot. So without further ado, let's get into it. Please leave a review wherever you listen to it, Spotify, Apple. Much appreciate it. Let's get started. It's a pleasure to have you here with me today, Colby. Thank you so much for joining the show. And for those who don't know about, obviously, Thread Wallets, who are you? What do you do? And what are you guys all about?
Yeah, well, my name's Colby Bauer. I'm from Arizona here in the States originally and came up to Utah for school. And this is now my adopted home and I absolutely love it. Throughout school, I was actually bouncing back and forth to Hawaii. There's a BYU, Brigham Young University, and a Brigham Young University, Hawaii. And so I was actually playing soccer in college. And I had the opportunity to bounce back and forth and they play at different seasons. So I was playing soccer in both places and it was amazing. I ended up in a roundabout way meeting my now wife, Mackenzie, out in Hawaii. And then the following year, we moved up to Hawaii and we started a company selling at farmers markets. And that company is Thread Wallets, now known as Thread, because we're now expanding our product line. The past 8 years, my wife and I have built both that together and our family, which is a family of us and three little girls. We just had our third baby. She's
congratulations.
Only a month old. So we reside here in Provo, Utah, very outdoorsy. I love action sports, outdoor recreation. My wife and I love to travel together. She's a huge foodie. So she's always like on the Yelp game looking for the best restaurants. And our girls are just super active and they're the best, the cutest little girls ever. So
that's amazing.
That's our life today. We're running that together. My wife is, I would say, the better one, the one that you should be interviewing. but she is amazing. She's very passionate about a number of things, but Women in business is a major topic that she loves to push. I would say women empowerment in general, and just being inclusive to any and all communities and demographics. I think she's devoted a lot of her attention and time to refugees here in Utah, to the LGBTQ communities, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, she's just an incredible person. And so, and then we just started a nonprofit in tandem with Thread that I've been really focusing on. So our hands are full. We have, actually, if you can see, there's a little one. I don't know if you can see through the glass.
Oh, there she is.
Yeah, that's our 3-year-old.
Is she the middle?
She's three. Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
And she's the middle. So
how old's the oldest?
6, 3, and then a month old.
Wow. Okay. So you got a tiny bit of breathing room.
Yeah, tiny bit. But yeah, like I said, our hands are full. I'm rambling now, but yeah, we're busy, but it's all great things, and we're very passionate about these things.
So what's harder than being the father of 3 young girls or running the business?
Oh man, if I could just be a dad all day, I would just absolutely love it. I would just cruise on. We have this little e-bike, yeah. And I would just cruise the city, and we'd go to pool, and we'd go to the river, we'd go to restaurants. I mean, if that was my full-time job, I think that would be easier just because I love them so much. But I actually like the balance. You know, I think I personally need a little bit of both, you know, to be my best at both. I need to kind of balance that. So
no, that's amazing. Sounds like you're in a really good place. I also have to ask you, Kobe, that soccer, you mentioned about soccer. Do you have a favorite team? Because obviously I'm from the UK and we call it football over here, but I'm a massive fan. I actually support Manchester City as my first true love. Do you have a favorite team that you support now, or is it maybe one over in the States?
I can't say my team now because it's not Man City, but
it's Manchester United. Yeah. Is it?
I will say it's changed over the years. I have actually become less and less fanatical about the EPL. Not that I.
Why is that?
It's not less on their part. It's more just my own time. You know, I would. But it started out being Man U. I actually ended up falling in love with Fulham. I went to a Fulham-Liverpool game out there, and I for whatever reason, fell in love with Fulham. So it's hard to choose.
That's amazing stuff.
Choose now, but I did start as a Man U fan.
Okay, yeah. And then they stopped winning trophies.
Exactly.
But what's interesting is, even though I did actually have a season ticket back in the day, I just don't really, so for me, I don't know about yourself, but I'm kind of all in or nothing. And that's probably not a good thing. It's a bit of a double-edged sword. So I get really emotionally tied to it. So I almost, even though my brothers tell me about the results all the time, so I still go to the games because business is so demanding. I almost just don't try to watch it. And I just, yeah, like you, I've kind of watched it less.
That's exactly me. I think it's a symptom of my ADHD, where I'm either 0 out of 10 or I'm like 15 out of 10. You know, it's like I'm all in, or I'm just like, I can't focus on it. So I can't give it the attention. But if it's something I'm really passionate about and I have the time for, I'm like, I'm all in,
yeah,
you know?
That's why my camera's in black and white, man, because that's what it's all about. So I was actually going to ask you about your story then. Obviously, you said, you know, you went to Hawaii and this was a memorable trip. Now, tell me about the piece of broccoli. What was that all about? Because we talk about, you know, a founder's story. Not many of them start in the grocery store, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I grew up in Arizona and I always envied those California kids that had the ocean to surf in. So when I committed to go play soccer out there, I was actually more committing to learn to surf. And I get out there, and within my first week, we hadn't started playing or anything yet for soccer. So I went out into the ocean, bought a really bad board. I dove into Pipeline, of all places. Pipeline's like, it's known by the surf community as one of the best waves in the world. And I totally forgot that I had my leather little card holder in my board shorts. And after surfing, I went to go reach in and it was gone. So another lost wallet to the ocean. And I went online that week to just buy a new wallet. And I typed in men's wallets online on just Google. And honestly, it was the same. If you ever watched Seinfeld, the George Costanza wallet, that big old chunky thing, mostly black and brown leather, either bifolds or trifolds, just this clunky thing, something that your dad would rock in the 80s. And I didn't see anything that I liked, you know, especially being out in Hawaii. It was a very minimalist lifestyle, and I actually fell in love with that. And so I ended up not buying anything And instead, I renewed all my cards and, you know, my driver's license and my credit card. And I just had them in my pocket and they were just loose in my pocket. And I was going throughout the grocery store there called Foodland. And I see a thick rubber band around the broccoli and the asparagus aisle. And I snatched that right off and I wrapped that around my cards. And I had my new perfect minimalist wallet. And I absolutely fell in love with how easy it was and how simple, and also how it, I was in wet board shorts most of my day. So the fact that it wouldn't get ruined by being wet all the time. And so I used that throughout that year. And then fast forward, I transferred back out to Utah, BYU here in Utah. And I took this class. It was a crowdfunding class. And so we had to come up with a product idea to launch on Kickstarter throughout the semester. So I'm thinking about different product ideas. And as we're going through Kickstarter, I noticed there's a handful of wallet projects, campaigns that performed extremely well. I mean, a simple wallet was raising hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I was just like, that is a huge category that I don't think there's enough love in.
Why do you think there was so much being raised for this category specifically? You just literally think it was the opportunity.
Yeah. Well, I think number one, minimalism was really hot. So taking everybody's and everyone on their campaigns, these wallet campaigns that were raising a lot of money, were pitching the idea of get rid of your chunky wallet and slim down to this, you know, and that's enticing. That's a great selling point. And so you saw a number of wallets starting to sprout, minimalist wallets starting to kind of sprout up online and throughout Kickstarter. And obviously that people wanted that. And a lot of these projects were taking a number of different approaches. So like one was made out of wood. Another one was made out of leather. You know, one was made out of metal. And there was few, but there was one that really caught my eye that was made of elastic. And I was like, I'm using a rubber band. And elastic is so perfect. You know, it can expand and contract based on the number of cards you have, and it remains very slim. Again, it plays well with being very active and in the water all the time. I love that. And so what I thought was a combination that wasn't really focused on was the minimalist in its functionality, but very expressive in the art and the aesthetic. So I was combining the two, and I kind of ripped the page out of the playbook of a company I love that was up and coming called Stance Socks. And what they did, it was exactly what I wanted to do with wallets, was they did it with socks, where they took a boring category and brought it to life with art and color and obviously a functional working sock, high performance sock. And so I thought, if I could just launch something like that, and I've always been attracted to lifestyle brands and action sport brands that are really focused on expression. And so that's what I gravitated towards. So I thought, okay, if I would like that, you know, a better rubber band, but it had some really cool patterns on it, I wonder if anybody else would like that as well.
And how did you launch it?
I had the idea, and then I needed to find a way to print or to sew in our patterns. That's the what kind of I envisioned. So I reached out on Alibaba.com. I reached out to a number of factories in China, and they quoted me at, they could do it and all that, but they quoted at 500 minimum order. So I had to order 500 of each style for this to work. And the way that I envisioned it, it wasn't just one style. It needed to be an array of styles. So I thought, okay, that's not going to work. So I went back to the drawing board and I found out about this company. It's called Beloved. And what they do is they print on shirts, and it wasn't screen printing, because screen printing, you have to do it color by color, you know, and this was, they were printing like pepperoni pizza all over the shirt, you know, and it was high resolution photographs or like a sloth's face all over, you know, just like weird random stuff. And so I looked into like how they were doing this, and I couldn't figure out, obviously the online, they didn't like declare what they were doing, but I found out that they were in the neighboring city. Of all places in the world, they were in Orem, Utah, which is 10 minutes from my home at the time.
Wow. Okay.
And so I go, oh my gosh, like I could just go in there. And what I did is I bought some white elastic fabric from this local fabric store called Joann's Fabric. I walked into Beloved headquarters unannounced. Nobody was there to greet me or anything. I walk into the back where they're doing all the production and all the fulfillment. And I'm just kind of observing. And I don't think many people really noticed who I was, you know, if I was there. And I saw this guy in the corner. He was a younger guy. And he sat there and he pulled out a white sock and he laid it on this heat press. And then he took a piece of paper that had the print on it. Say it was like a pepperoni pizza. And he laid it over the white sock and then he pressed it and heat pressed it for like a minute or so. And then he opened up the press and the print was on the sock now. It went from the paper to the sock just like that, like magic. And I went up to him and I was like, what is going on? Like, how are you doing this? And he says it's a process called sublimation. And so, and it's a certain type of ink that actually sits into the fabric. And I was like, this is insane. And obviously many companies use sublimation.
Yeah. It was back in like 2015, right?
Exactly. It? Yeah. And it wasn't a new technology necessarily, but it was new to me. And so I was just like eating this up. And so I told him, I said, hey, I'm working on this school project and I want to make these wallets. I was curious to know if this would work on my white elastic. He's like, well, let's give it a go. And so he grabbed a poop emoji pattern paper and he put the white elastic up on the heat press and he put the thing over and he's about to press it. And I'm like, hold on, wait, I don't know what this is made of. Like this elastic could just melt all over your machine. And he's like, ah, who cares? And he pushed it down. I'm like, yes, I love you. And I'm waiting, just praying that he didn't just like ruin this machine. And he opens it up and it is exactly how I wanted it to be. Like it was perfect. I remember looking at it and thinking like, just like stretching it out, like it didn't lose its shape. You know, the color was so perfect. It wasn't too shiny. It was just exactly how I wanted it to be first try. Like what are the odds?
Oh yeah, that's amazing.
And so anyways, I take that home with me and I have this elastic and I have this poop emoji and I'm like, how does this work? Am I just going to do it? Like, is it a leather wallet with elastic? Is it just elastic? Like trying to figure it out. Long story short, I was like, I'm just going to oversimplify this thing. And I didn't have a sewing machine. So I just stapled and like hot glued this like really bad elastic wallet shut. And I just used it just as like my own prototype. Like, is this functional? Do I like it? And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I launched the campaign and honestly, it didn't do very well. I mean, it wasn't like, it was a school project. I really threw it together. There was no money really behind it. And so my goal was $8,000 to raise. And I had raised, by the end of the campaign, I'd raised like $2,000, something over $2,000. Then out of nowhere, my best friend, Romy, who somehow had some money from I never knew how, I won't ask. But he donated $6,000 to the campaign.
Wow, amazing.
And so I raised my $8,000. So what you see publicly is like, oh, they raised $8,000. Well, $6,000 of that was just from one individual. And that money was enough money to get the printer and the heat press and all the materials I needed to actually run this company. And going back to the drawing board, I thought, well, you know, these wallets didn't do very well, at least as well as I hoped. So maybe there's another company that I could start that could use the same techniques, the same machinery. And so I looked at socks and I was playing soccer at the time. So I thought many of these teams, they go to practice and they all wear a hodgepodge of random socks that, you know, that all the game socks, the knee-high socks are all unified, but the training socks that, you know, just go up to your shin, there was no uniformity. So I thought, well, let's just, you know, I could print on the team logo or the team colors and sell them at mass to different clubs and teams around the world. So that's what I started doing. I ordered 500 socks, just white socks on from China, and they're getting produced. And as I'm going to soccer practice, and I notice all the friends that were on my team that had backed the campaign for the wallets, they started raving about this wallet. And they're like, this is my favorite wallet I've ever had. And I remember thinking like, I totally thought they were just buying it as a friend, you know, just to back it and, you know, support. But they actually loved the wallet. And I was like, I do too. Like, I love the wallet. And I thought, oh, maybe it was just me. But no, it's like 10 people now telling me like, this is the best wallet they've ever had. And so I start thinking and I'm like, man, like, I do see the actual opportunity with wallets being much bigger than socks because there's so many competitors in socks. It's kind of ripe for disruption in the wallet category. So I thought, I think I could really stand above the crowd more on the wallets than the socks. So I reached out to China and I was like, I made the decision. I'm going to cancel the order.
500.
Yeah, 500 stuff. And they said, well, we're already halfway through production, so I have to charge you a full amount or like 50% of the amount, but then you won't get any of the socks. And I was like, man, that's like thousands of dollars out of my pocket. But I really like, I took that and I thought about it and prayed about it. And I was like, you know, like I believe in the wallets. And I felt like I needed to go that route. So long story short, I went with the wallets and I remember thinking, okay, I'm about to transfer back out to Hawaii in about a few months. And maybe I could take a bunch of wallets out there and sell them, you know? And I was like, okay, I need to make some wallets. So I printed all of them. And then I was like, I need to sew them. I don't have a sewing machine. And so I was looking for somebody who had a sewing machine. I met this girl who was willing to sew and actually teach me to sew. And as we're sewing, she goes, you know what you need to do is you need to add a key ring to this wallet. You know, for a girl, I would use this because I hate carrying a purse. Like I would just use I'd grab my keys and my wallet all in one chunk. And that would be awesome. And for me, I was thinking like in my head, I was like, no, this is more of a male wallet. Like this is like females won't like this. She's like, no, I've actually like it. So she grabbed one of her headbands off of her doorknob and cut it up and into a little loop and sewed it into the wallet and attached a keyring to it. And so I took that and I started using it just to see how I would like it. And I remember like taking a picture later that day. I was just in Costco and I took a picture and sent it to her. I was like, you're a genius. I love it. And long story short, I ended up falling in love with her. And that's my wife, Mackenzie.
Great story.
And together we sewed up 1,000 wallets before we left for Hawaii. We got married and literally the day after we moved to Hawaii, and it was fast, man. I mean, we got married fast and we, it was all just a blur. So I had these 1,000 wallets in our suitcase in the corner of our apartment. And I remember telling my wife, Mackenzie, I was like, by the end of this semester, I'll have sold every single one of those. And she's like, all right, I'll believe it when I see it. And then fast forward 3 months, I have like one more month in my semester and I had sold zero. And I was like, who has time to sell wallets when you're living in Hawaii?
Yeah.
And playing soccer, going to school. And then on weekends, like the last thing I'm going to do is go try and sell wallets. But at the same time, I felt this pressure, like I'm going to graduate this semester. And what am I going to do afterwards? So I was like, I got to figure this out. So we went door to door. And long story short, we were able to validate this product in stores. And then we started selling at farmers markets. And these little farmers markets leading up to Christmas, the demand for our wallets was just insane. It was just crazy. And I watched Mackenzie sell these things. I wasn't the one. She was the one like reeling people in. And by the time they were done, it was like, oh,
wow,
I love your hat. And then all of a sudden, like they were walking away with 5 wallets. You know what I mean? Like it was just amazing. And so we both needed this face-to-face feedback and validation to know that, okay, this is a viable business. This can work. And that way, when I graduated and I was really stressed, okay, what do I do? Do I go get a job? I had an opportunity to play professional soccer. And I just thought, I think I'm ready to hang up the cleats. I really want to start my own business. I've always been attracted to entrepreneurship and I'm not attracted to the corporate setting. So let's just give this thing a go. And Mackenzie was all on board. I mean, she's like, yes, let's do it. And so we gave ourselves 6 months. We said, okay, let's give it 6 months. And if it doesn't work, then we can reevaluate. If it is, then we have our answer. And so we moved back to Utah with her parents and we're living in her childhood bedroom at this point. And so this is 2015. We formalized the business as Thread Wallets LLC and we launched a second Kickstarter campaign. And in short, we raised over $30,000. But the big part for us after was how much resources we put into influencer marketing. This was right at the beginning. I think it's like the beginning of influencer marketing. And we really rode that wave really hard. So we sent out our product to everyone and anyone and gave them a handwritten note and they all of a sudden started posting. So we launched our website the week after our Kickstarter campaign ended. And within the first 2 days, we had sold $16,000 of product,
wow,
which, you know, for us, that was like way more than we thought, you know, and to know that, oh, this model could work. And so Mackenzie took the reins on marketing.
The door-to-door selling.
Yeah. And I took retail, I took operations, so the production. She took customer service. I took, you know, web design. We kind of just all of a sudden started to like find our lanes, and we defined them and say, and that I feel like is really what we needed is, you know, starting the marriage and a business. We needed to like be very clear on, okay, you own this, you own this. But we thought about this business, and we were calculating numbers, and we just thought, okay, if we could sell 5 walls today, that will be enough. That's enough to get us to this first step. And then we'll take it from there. So not thinking of, so, you know, yes, we have this end goal in mind and this vision for the company, but how do we just get to the first step? And how do we oversimplify things just to get to that first step and then to the next step? And so we thought, okay, we're only going to do Instagram. Like, we could have done Twitter and Pinterest and Facebook and Instagram. No, we just focus on one. And that was our, and within that, we only focused on two things: giveaways and influencer marketing. And that was it.
And that's all for part one. Part two is going to be released later this week. We did have a little bit of trouble because Colby's laptop shut down and it ran out of power. And then his daughter was there in the office. He actually introduced her to. She's extremely cute. And yeah, he's got 3 little daughters and it was a pleasure to meet them. But yeah, part two going to be about strategy, how he's really got the name, the brand out there about Threadwallet. So stay tuned for that later this week. But have a great start to a week wherever you listen to this. Stay true to yourself.